Good morning, everybody. We are going to get started on Representative Quam's bill without actually calling the meeting to order because we don't have a quorum yet. But welcome to the House Property Tax and Local Government Finance Division. Representative Quam, if you want to just begin by presenting your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. And it's a fairly simple, straightforward bill, and it doesn't impact a lot of people. But when you've got someone whose family and he have run a farm for their life, he was in his 60s, and because of the fact they had sold some property off and it wasn't contiguous to the house he was living in, and he was renting at the time, he lost the homestead credit, and property taxes went up above the actual income from tillable rental, and he looked at me, and tears were in his eyes, and he said, "I don't want to be the one that has to sell off the farm for taxes." And so this bill simply says that if this farm has been worked by the family, you know, the person, the spouse, or their families for 10 years or longer, they don't have to jump through the hoops to qualify as being a farmer. There's a fiscal note that basically says it would be negligible. It'd be very few. But to those few that have given their lives to farming, they shouldn't be wrapped up in the red tape that would make it difficult to hang on to the farm. Some are waiting for their grandchildren to get old enough to be able to farm and take it over. So that period where it's being rented out, we need to make sure that farmers our farmers in our code.
Thank you, Representative Quam. With that, the chair calls the meeting to order. The meeting of the House Property Tax and Local Government Finance Committee. Let's proceed, members, with the minutes and dispose of those. Is there a motion to approve the minutes?
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Representative Frankie moves the minutes of the February 1st meeting. Any additions or corrections to the minutes as presented, members? Hearing none, all in favor of approving the minutes of the last meeting of February 1st, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion passes. Those minutes are adopted as presented. With that, Representative Barr moves House File 40 to be entertained by the committee and then laid over for possible inclusion. Representative Quam, thank you for your early introduction of your bill. Anything else you'd like to add? Any testifiers for or against House File 40? Mr. Main.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Tom May. I'm the retired Hennepin County Assessor, and I represent the Minnesota Association of Assessing Officers. In our position statement that we prepare for the legislature each year, we do have a position on agricultural classification, and it reads like this. MAO supports consolidating agricultural land and buildings, excluding house, garage, and 1 acre, into a single classification rate. Changes to the qualifications for agricultural homestead have added to the complexity of administration of the agricultural homestead classification, confusion on the part of taxpayers. I think this is one of our main points and one of the things that assessors in rural Minnesota really have an issue with. I'm sure everybody's seen this chart in the past. This is the chart that Department of Revenue has put together on how assessors should go about determining whether someone qualifies for homestead. And with bills like House File 40, we're just adding more bullets and more bubbles to this chart, and it really becomes very, very confusing. So we're on the side of simplification and trying to make agricultural classification and homestead classification much simpler. Thank you, and I would answer any questions you might have.
Thank you, Mr. May. Anyone else that would like to testify for or against the bill? Okay, hearing none, any questions for Mr. May or the author? Thank you, Representative Quam. Representative Quam.
You saw the complexity of that. Think of a person that's in their later years of life who, you know, that's an awfully confusing thing, and they make a wrong check somewhere, and they fall off. This bill, yes, it doesn't make it more complex, but what it does is add an off-ramp at the first point of that chart. You know, have you or your family run this farm for 10 years or more? Boom. Yes. Now you're done with the chart. And I apologize. It's making it a little bit more complex, but I think it's the right thing to do.
Thank you, Representative Quam. Members, any other questions? Hearing none, the chair lays over House File 40 for possible inclusion. Thank you, Representative Quam. Representative Detmer and House File 119. Representative Lunin moves House File 119 to be laid over for possible inclusion. Welcome, Representative Detmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. House File 119, if you understand what the current law is, the homestead property owned by a veteran with a 70% greater service-connected disability is eligible for a market value exclusion up to $150,000. However, for a total of permanent disability, or 100%, up to $300,000. That's current law of the market value excluding. Also, under the current law, the surviving spouse of a deceased veteran who has had 100% disability is eligible to continue receiving the exclusion for for 8 years. And about 2 years ago, 2 or 3 years ago, we increased it from 5 years to 8 years. I think 8 years ago, it used to be 2 years, and we increased it from 2 years to 5 years. Until a spouse remarries or ceases to own the property, which comes first. The proposal that we have in front of you, Mr. Chair, would allow surviving spouses to continue receiving the benefit indefinitely as long as they live in the home, it's in their name, and they do not remarry. In addition, the proposal would allow spouses of deceased veterans to make a first-time application of the exclusion if the veteran with 100% disability died after December 31st, 2011, and never applied for or received the exclusion. We found a loophole in this legislation, and it was in the tax bill last year, and when I came forward with it this year, Disabled American Veterans Association came to me and said, there is a loophole. There are some surviving spouses that fall through the cracks. So what this bill will do also is to correct that situation. So with me I have Trent Dilks, who's the commander of the DAV, Disabled American Veterans, and he would like to chat with the committee too. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Detmer. Welcome, Mr. Dilks.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Trent Dilks, Legislative Director for the Disabled American Veterans Department of Minnesota. I'd like to start by sharing an experience I had. In August of last year, I sat down at the kitchen table with a terminally ill Vietnam veteran. He had just been diagnosed with cancer. He had no prior experience with the VA. He had never filed a claim and was not utilizing any benefits at that point. The cancer, the multiple forms of aggressive cancer, all presumptive to his exposure to Agent Orange while serving in Vietnam. Pushed his claim through very quickly. The VA moves quick in these cases, and he was service-connected within a week. Unfortunately, in October, he passed away directly as a result of his service in Vietnam and from his exposures with Agent Orange. He had been 100% three times over. They weren't sure which cancer would kill him first, so it's important for his widow to get those benefits that we had all of them connected for the cause of death. When it came time for the homestead property tax value exclusion, his widow did not qualify. He was not currently receiving the benefit, and that's how it's been kind of played out. It wasn't clear in law, but as they've made the rules and things to enforce it, and House research had turned something out that said they must be receiving the benefit, not just eligible for it at the time of death. What this means is this veteran who was terminally ill and extremely ill he would have needed to live about 16 months because he would have to make the July deadline prior to the July deadline for filing, and then they have to be receiving the benefit in the tax assessment year. I've talked with CVSOs. There's one or two widows in their counties that they can each reference where something like this has happened, where the veteran died too quickly as a result of their service-connected illness. What this bill would do is it would protect widows like this so they don't fall through the cracks. I believe the original law would have intended to protect them as I went through it, but there was a small loophole, and some of them are being left out. It would also extend to a lifetime. We're losing our Vietnam veterans at a younger age. We would like their widows to be able to stay in the home as long as they choose. And it would still even place if they remarry and move, they would no longer qualify for the exclusion. And the last thing it would do is it would add an eligibility for widows or surviving spouses that are receiving DIC, dependency and indemnity compensation. How this affects them is if you die directly as a result of your service, your surviving spouse can become eligible for DIC, dependency and indemnity compensation. And with adding that to it, we'd like to say, if a veteran dies directly as a result of their service to this country, we want their surviving spouse protected. House File 119 would do that and would close this loophole. It's not a major impact as far as numbers. We're talking about House research came back with 1/100th of 1% for the majority of counties as far as their impact for property tax. But to make sure the spouses of our most severely disabled veterans, the ones who died directly as a result of their service to this country, we'd like to see it supported and move forward. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Dilks. Anyone else who would like to testify on behalf of this bill? Mr. May.
Mr. Chair, members, Tom May, Minnesota Association of Assessing Officers. First thing I'd like to make clear is we're 100% in support of veteran benefits and don't have an issue with this particular bill. What we do have in our position is that we'd like to see this benefit be a state program, maybe like the property tax refund. And the reason we say that is then the cost of the benefit would fall evenly across the state of Minnesota. Right now it falls more heavily on those areas that have veterans facilities. Carlton County especially is impacted much higher than other counties on this because of their veterans facility. So we'd just like to see the entire program move to a state-funded program so that it's even distribution of the cost. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. May. Anyone else would like to testify? Okay, members' questions. Representative Markberg.
So thank you very much, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Detmer, for bringing this forward. I remember when we did this bill, and I think it was 2007 or 2008, one year we had a veto, and then I forget what year. In fact, I think it was a Representative Rukavina bill originally, but it got into our property tax bill. And, I mean, the intent was to make sure we provided this benefit for those who had served our country and had disabilities. And so you bring up a great point. I mean, the intent was to provide those veterans with that benefit. And at the time, I don't ever remember discussing the situation you mentioned. So it was something that we just didn't think of at the time. And I also remember at the time, the benefit to the spouse was much discussed. I remember in conference committee. And I think initially it was just a year or two originally, and then it's been changed since. And I think to have this permanent is good. Otherwise, you're looking potentially at, you know, if you had this veteran who had 100% total and permanent disability of $300,000, you know, that could be easily a $3,000-$4,000 property tax bill. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you already would have the sadness of the death of the veteran, and now you would have the spouse all of a sudden seeing property taxes go from hardly anything to, you know, $3,000-$4,000. So I think this is something we absolutely should try to get into the bill if we can. And, you know, the intent, as you said, was to provide this benefit to the veteran. And so thank you for bringing that up. It's something we just didn't think about at the time. So thank you.
Thank you. Members, other questions, comments on the bill?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Following up on your comment, Representative, we are providing the benefit, but the counties are paying it, or they're at least shifting their tax burden. So I like the idea from Mr. May, and if we could get some numbers as to how many this may affect in the state and the cost it would be to the state, to provide that credit. So we back up what we're thinking and saying that, yeah, we'll provide the benefit, but we won't put the burden on the counties.
Thank you, Representative Anderson. Ms. Schill, do we have any idea what that is or not?
Mr. Chair, I think I'd need to put a request into Department of Revenue to see what the overall spread would be statewide. So I can put that request in.
Thank you for doing that. Members, other questions? Okay. Representative Detmer, any closing comments on your bill?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members and Representative Marquardt. I know you being out in the legislature for the years that you have been, you've been able to see but we have a lot of new members that are and it's good to be sharing that information about with other members. And I think we, as a state of Minnesota, we can be very proud that we are taking actions on these types of situations to help our veterans, in this case, veterans' spouses, especially that 100% disability, that many times these spouses are caring for their disabled veteran in their homes. And I think this is something that we can look at and go forward. And Representative Anderson, I think you can take a look at that and see if we want to make those changes. It'd be easy to amend the current bill, the current statute. But I think we're doing the right thing. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Representative Detmer. And members, Mr. Hines thinks he can kind of venture a ballpark guess on that number. Mr. Hines.
Mr. Chairman, assuming we'd be talking about doing it for the entire program and not just the additional piece that's coming in through House File 119, there's about $2 billion of excluded value in the Disabled Vet Program right now. So if you assume about 1% tax on that, that would be about $20 million. So just ballpark, that'd be probably a pretty good guess.
And that'd be for the entire program, Mr.
For the entire, to move the entire Disabled Vet Program over to a state paid rather than a shifted, yeah.
Thank you. Members, thank you. Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess the question that Mr. Hines was speaking is the entire program, so that would include the 70% disabled that are getting a benefit now while they're alive, but that doesn't continue after they pass away. So we're just talking, so that includes them also in this $2 billion.
Mr. Hines.
Mr. Chair, Representative Nelson, that's correct. It's really the present program. This is a fairly minor addition to the cost through this bill.
Mr. Chair, I think this $20 million might be a little bit less because if we're only talking, this only extends to the 100% disabled, so the 70% disabled wouldn't be part of that. So would think, in just thinking about it, it would be less than the $20 million that figure. But like I said, it's just a guess.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Nelson, what I'm saying is if the entire disabled veterans program that's in place now was moved over to property tax, that would be $20 million. As I'm saying, Representative Detmer's bill here is that piece alone would be a very small amount.
Thank you. Members, other questions, comments? Thank you, Representative Detmer, Mr. Dilks, Mr. May, and others. With that, Representative Lunan renews his motion that House File 119 be laid over for possible inclusion. With that, we'll lay over House File 119. And Representative Detmer, House File 555. And with that, Representative Frankie moves House File 555 to be entertained by the committee and then laid over for possible inclusion. Representative Detmer, please present your bill, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. House File 555. First, I would like to ask, how many here have VFWs, American Legions, in your districts? Okay, so we all have a lot in common here. And the property tax refunds on what we're talking about here for American Legions and VFWs, the proposal would grant a reduction classification rate for Class 4C3 properties that are owned and operated by congressional chartered veterans organizations. The classification rate for these properties would be reduced from 1.5% to 1%, beginning with taxes payable in 2018. The Department of Veterans Affairs would be required to provide a list of qualified organizations to the Department of Revenue each year. I think we have a situation here in Minnesota that we're losing a lot of our American Legion VFWs, and there's various reasons for that. And I've talked to, I know our Legion and VFW, which I belong to both in Forest Lake and other communities, that one of the reasons is the, number one, the reductions of membership. And I've talked to both organizations, their leadership, that we have to do a better job getting our young veterans, our men and women coming back from service overseas or our National Guard Reserve and have them join these organizations. The World War II veteran population, as we know, another 8-10 years, and that whole generation might be gone. We're looking at Korean War, Vietnam War, and now the war on terrorism. And so that's one reason. Another reason is this property tax issue that these two organizations own, many of them own properties in their communities. And this is one way that we can reduce that burden on these two organizations. And I have a testifier here, Mr. Andrew Peters. He's with the American Legion, and he'd like to share some information with us.
Representative Detmer, welcome, Mr. Peters.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, committee members, and I'd like to thank...
Mr. Peters, can you introduce yourself first?
Sorry. I'm sorry. I've been away too long. My name is Andrew Peters. I'm a 48-year member of the American Legion. I volunteered for the draft in 1963, U.S. Army. My MOS is Aircraft Mechanic Crew Chief and Courts and Boards in JAG.
And on behalf of the committee, Mr. Peters, thank you for your service.
Thank you. I first became concerned with this. I went to a Minnesota Legion Department convention last year, and I started talking to a number of veterans. As Wabasha County Commander, I'm in my second month, and I'm learning a tremendous amount of protocol and information. I became alarmed the number of veteran organization posts that are struggling. In my county alone, I've got four posts, Mazeppa, Lake City, Millville, and Plainview, who have buildings, but they're struggling. And it's very difficult to keep the doors open. I have three other posts, Wabasha, Kellogg, and Elgin, who had to sell their buildings. And the reasons were, with assessed values going up, property taxes go up, insurance goes up, utility costs go up, and it's starting to put a financial burden. And just a little background, I'll use the American Legion, and I'm sure the VFW follows the same criteria. Our purpose as an organization is us veterans, war uniform, as the highs in the Vietnam era. I'll kind of share a personal story. When I came back from the Vietnam era in uniform, I was spat at by the American public. I took it off thinking, geez, I better shed this image. I was still spat at. I tried for my first 3 years to get a job. When I found, they says, you're a veteran, Vietnam War, get the hell out of here. You're a baby killer. We don't hire them. I've lived with that stigma for 55 years. And I discovered the Legion VFW was a safe haven. I went into these buildings, and I saw a different U.S. of America. We all wore the uniform. We defended the flag. We cared less about rank or branch of service. It was a safe haven. Then as I became more actively involved, we are a strong supporter of youth. We feel it's the future of our nation. We do not want to see them go to war. If they do, they're going to go in with the conviction, as I shared. We support youth and community programs. We support veterans programs. We're a strong supporter of national security, and we really advocate Americanism. I've been touring Wabasha County and other counties making a presentation on these resolutions, and it's amazing. We have boy state and girl state. I see posts spending up from $5,000 to $15,000 every year to send boys and girls for leadership training who are the future of our country. We have Legion Camp or Legionville, a camp that's every year. One post spends over $15,000 sending 20 to 25 kids up. And so we do these kinds of things. We also have an honor guard and a color guard that all posts provide since the National Guard does not want to do it. We pick this up. And I've done 32 presentations last year, proudly presenting the colors at civic functions and as well as performing at funerals, including down in the state cemetery in Preston. And the reason we need our building, it's much like in the military. We have to have barracks. Us Legion veterans need to have a building. Every time we have a ceremony, we get together beforehand. We make sure our weapons are clean and ready to fire. We store them. We store our colors. We sometimes will go through some special training because certain ceremonies have special circumstances, and we orchestrate and train. We use the meeting rooms to conduct fundraisers so we can support the wealth. And so I am a very strong supporter of this bill to give us some relief. And I become a strong advocate. And again, I want to thank Representative Detmer and Representative Joukowsky for getting the bill and signing on the bill and moving it forward. So I'm a very strong supporter of this bill. And I'm open for any questions if there are any. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Peters. Anyone else that would like to testify on behalf of the bill? Okay. Members' questions or comments on the bill? Representative Loeffler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'm wondering if Mr. Hines can answer a question. I see from the revenue note that this would be about half of the Class 4-3C nonprofit community service-oriented organization property. What do you have a sense of what the other half would be? Are they similar organizations or just not affiliated with the military? I don't know, a Lions Club or something else. We've talked about simplicity as a goal, and this would, of course, add a little more complexity. But I'm just wondering who the rest of this in this category are.
Thank you. Mr. Hines.
Mr. Chair, Representative Loeffler, I don't know a lot about this, but I think it's like Elks Club, Moose Club, Lions Club, like you said. There may be others that other people know about, but those are the ones that come to mind for me.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Detmer.
I think what we're talking here, the legislation that's before you deals with the congressional chartered organizations, which in my mind, or what I know, is just that those two organizations that we're talking about, the Legions and the VFWs, they're congressionally chartered organizations for veterans.
Yeah, I think Representative Loeffler's question is, what percentage do those represent of all of them in this particular class? Is that it, Representative Loeffler?
Right, Mr. Chairman, because I was just wondering if the others in this category basically provide the same community benefits in terms of raising money for youth activities and you know, other things. And so split, you know, the pros and cons of splitting this class and creating it two different groups out of two sets of organizations that pretty much do similar things in the community.
Thank you. Other questions? Representative Joaquin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just want to try to understand, too, that when it talks about any revenue benefit on part of the property is still at the 1.5, so does that mean the hall would be down to a 1 classification and the bar would be at a 1.5, or is the whole property going from a 1.5 down to a 1?
Mr. Hines.
Mr. Chair, Representative Yuki, the bar, I think, actually would still be commercial industrial.
Okay.
Even under current law, I believe it does provide that is split out for the bar restaurant. And so that would not be affected. That part of it would not be affected by this.
Representative Yuki.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was just wondering if it leads to a little more complication, too. Thanks.
Thank you. Other questions or comments, members? Okay, thank you. Representative Detmer, if you want to give any close-up here.
Again, I think most of you, I was a teacher and coach for 34 years, and I can remember going back to my American Legion VFWs where I have membership to always ask for donations for our athletic teams, uniforms, wrestling mats, you name it. All the different organizations of athletic teams always came to these organizations for donations, and what we're seeing now is that a lot of these donations are not there because of the taxes and the property taxes and so forth. And also, we talked about boys' states and girls' states. I'm on an interview team where we have boys come in and we interview every year. We send five young men to boys' states, and also we have an interview team for the girls' state. And the honor guard and the color guard, they're very busy. And I think here's another example of what we can do for our veterans organizations here in Minnesota is that if as a legislature, if we speak with one voice, things get done. So thank you very much, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Detmer, and I would be remiss to not thank you, sir, for your service as well on behalf of the committee. Mr. Dilks, you and all the rest of the veterans here, thank you for your service, and thank you for coming here today.
And, Mr. Chair, if I could also add, as we speak, one of my sons, Rob, Lieutenant Colonel Rob Detmer, is on his way to Afghanistan. That will be his fourth deployment. His twin son, who's out at Fort Meade, Maryland, lives in D.C., has had four deployments. So just keep all of our men and women that are serving in your prayers. Thank you.
Thank you, and we will do. Mr. Hines has one more comment, members.
Mr. Chair, Representative Yurkeem, I guess I may need to say I'm not as certain of that answer as I thought. It does. I reading the existing legislation, and there's a one category that allows them to, if they have revenue-producing activities such as a bar, they can still qualify for this classification if they donate at least as much in donations as they pay in property taxes. So I believe that it is possible that the bar could still come in under this reduced percentage now. But I'm not 1,000% sure about that.
Thank you, Mr. Hines.
Mr. Chair, that's correct. We passed that legislation about 8 years ago that with these organizations, if the amount of money that they donate back into the community could also include the use of the facility and so forth, could be used as the amount of money that is donated back in the community that they get a break on their property taxes. But they have to apply through the county. There's forms in the county that they have to put in. So that's correct.
Thank you. With that, Representative Frankie renews his motion that House File 555 be laid over. And with that, the chair lays over House File 555. Representative Pearson, House File 632. Representative Whalen moves House File 632 to be entertained by the committee and then laid over for possible inclusion. Welcome to the Property Tax Committee, Representative Pearson.
Thank you, Chair Drazkowski. But before you is House File 632, we're basically looking at amending an existing statute that allows for properties with apprenticeship facilities within the state of Minnesota to be granted a waiver on the property taxes. We have a specific property in Olmsted County in Haverhill Township that was acquired a few years ago by one of our area unions and our state's unions. And so today I have with me Pete Paris, and he's here willing to give some testimony on the facility and specifically the functions that they do at that site or will do at that site.
Thank you, Representative Pearson. Mr. Paris, welcome. Please introduce yourself and proceed, sir.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, committee members. My name is Pete Paris. I'm with the Sheet Metal Workers Local Number 10. Local 10 covers three states, Minnesota, North Dakota, and South Dakota. We have four training centers throughout the state of Minnesota. These training centers are owned and run by the Joint Apprenticeship Training Committee, also known as the JATC. The JATC board is an equal representation of union members and sheet metal contractors. In August of 2015, Local 10 bought a property in Haverhill Township just outside of Rochester, Minnesota, to be a training center for our southern Minnesota area. Our southern Minnesota area includes 26 counties. Our program in southern Minnesota has been in existence for over 50 years. It has grown over the years, and we believe it will continue to grow in the coming years. This year alone, we are training 45 apprentices down in that area. The training center is 4,000 square feet and sits on 3 acres of land. It was previously a school for more than 50 years. Originally, it was owned by the public school district, sold to a private school, and we purchased it from them. We are in support of House File 632. Our training center meets all the exemptions of current law except for the township population exemption. The current exemption has a minimum threshold of 2,000. We support this being lowered to 1,400. If there's any questions, I'll be free to answer.
Thank you, Mr. Paris. So, Mr. Paris, the other three facilities you have in the state, they do qualify, is that correct?
Yes, they do.
Okay. Thank you. Representative Nelson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I don't know who can answer this. It's Representative Pearson or one of our staff, but currently I think I heard him say that it used to be a school, so there was, up until now, there's been no property tax collected on this property, so we're not, by extending this exemption, we're not raising anyone's property taxes because it currently is not taxed as a, because it was a school. Am I correct in that?
Mr. Representative Pearson?
Representative Nelson, Mr. Chair, that is correct. This property would be in the next coming year would qualify for the property tax. We have talked to both the township and Olmsted County, and they have no issue with this staying off the tax rolls for this purpose. They understand that this is a training facility, and it really does suit our demand and our needs, of course, with VMC and everything going on in Olmsted County very well. So they're supportive of this, and we did get a fiscal note impact on statewide impacts as well, and there are no other facilities that this lowering of the population mass in the township to 1,400 would affect. Of course, Minneapolis, St. Paul, they're currently within statute, so those facilities already have the exemption, and then there's a couple of narrowly tailored exemptions as well, and this is just lowering that threshold.
Representative Pearson, you're doing really well to invoke DMC. Just kidding.
Smile when you say that.
Other questions, members? Mr. Paris, thank you for coming. Representative Pearson, any final comments?
No, thank you for your consideration.
Thank you. With that, Representative Whalen renews her motion that House File 632 be laid over for possible inclusion. With that, the Bill 632 is laid over. Thank you, Representative Pearson. Thank you. Mr. Paris. Representative Peterson, welcome to the committee. We have Representative Lean moves House File 661 be entertained by the committee and then laid over for possible inclusion. Welcome, Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Chair Drazkowski and members. The bill you have before you relates to equal tax treatment for the manufactured housing cooperatives. House File 661 ensures that 600 households living in 7 manufactured housing cooperatives throughout the state are treated the same as all other property payers. So this would allow taxpayers to claim the property taxes paid on the land beneath their homes to be calculated when computing for their property tax refund. So currently, these individuals are the only category of property taxpayers who cannot secure a refund on the property taxes that they pay on their land. And you have a handout in your packet that kind of reflects how these are outliers, and that's one of the reasons why we're here today. We do have a fiscal note on this, which is about $180,000 a year. And but after it's addressed this one time, it's not going to take additional money going forward. So just so it's like a one-time cost. And I'd also like to thank the House research staff for all the hard work that they put into researching this. And one other point I want to add is that affordable housing promotes good home ownership. And so this is just one other way that affordable housing can be offered to hardworking Minnesotans. And I do have a witness here today to provide some testimony, and Kevin Walker, who's the Director of Business Development with North Country Cooperative Foundation, is here with your indulgence, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Peterson. Welcome, Mr. Walker. Please introduce yourself for the record.
Thank you. Good morning, Committee Chair Draskowski and members of the committee. As was said, I'm a Director of Business Development at North Country Cooperative Foundation. We're a nonprofit organization based in Minneapolis. Our mission is to transform lives and communities through cooperative enterprise. For the last 14 years, one of the primary ways we've acted on that mission has been to work with residents and willing sellers of manufactured housing communities, formerly known as mobile home parks or often known as mobile home parks, to help the residents purchase, improve, and preserve permanently their communities as a critical source of workforce housing. Through the cooperative model, homeowners assume responsibility for the management and operations of their community through a homeowners association. By internalizing lot rents to the properties can be improved and preserved by the residents themselves. So I'm here to testify in support of HF 661 to resolve this discrepancy in tax law, which negatively affects the over 500 households living in Minnesota's cooperatively owned manufactured housing communities. Residents of these cooperatives under Minnesota's current tax code are the only class of property taxpayers, as Representative Peterson had said, who receive no form of credit for the lot rent that they're paying on the land beneath their homes. So that's the background on it. We'd be happy to take questions related to this proposal.
Thank you, Mr. Walker. Anyone else would like to testify for or against the bill? Seeing none, members, any questions or comments on the bill? We have a quiet group here today, Representative Peterson. Representative Peterson, any closing comments?
Thank you.
We're in high gear here today.
Exactly. I love it, and it's a good bill, and I appreciate your support.
Okay. With that, members, Representative Lean renews his motion that House File 661 be laid over for possible inclusion. And with that, the Chair does lay over House File 661 for possible inclusion. Members, I think we've exhausted our list of agenda items early, and I wish we could do this more often, and we can all get back to the workshop now. So with that, members, the meeting is adjourned.